Hello there, and welcome to this week's Mashing In.
On location matching. That's mashing right. In.
Yeah. Matching In.
Matching now. In. No. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. It's been a long week for a lot of us.
That's a new fashion show.
We are sitting at the kitchen table of Stefan Turcotte.
That's right. And so any audiophiles that listen, they probably stop listening after the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It'll sound maybe a little bit different with these acoustics and stuff, but rest assured it is still us.
Yeah. Same.
So you heard Brian, and we also have...
It's not actually me. This is just pre-recorded. Okay.
Do you want to know who the Super Bowl winner is this year?
God.
It's been a lot of
time. I mean, for next year. Sorry.
Oh.
So we usually like to kick off the show. We're talking in a little bit hushed tones as well because my kids are sleeping, but we can get more boisterous as we get into the beer.
We're getting more comfortable now, so I think it's fine.
I was just trying to be sultry.
As so, Australians always are.
Yeah. We're still going on that one. It's good.
We like to start off with a little bit of the events that happened over the last week and that
might be coming up. Vic Beer Week.
Yeah, so Vic Beer Week wrapped up on Saturday with 3 events on Saturday.
Yeah.
I didn't go, but
I wasn't there. Were you at any of them?
I didn't hit all of them because I can't take that many events.
Yeah.
I did the Thursday night Garrick's Head. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Was that sour event?
Sour beer. Yeah, Pucker Up.
I heard that one was really good. People really enjoyed it, and a lot of people were posting around town about it being fun.
And then we went to Drink Your Hops Meet 2 on Friday.
I was there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun. Got to go with the wife for their soiree out. Babysitters, so yeah,
very nice.
Yeah,
and then it all wrapped up with the cast night on Saturday, which I really enjoyed this year. Like, they changed things up from previous years. It used to be if you were in, from what I understand, it's mostly hearsay, if you were in Victoria Beer Week, you had to present a cask. So they had 2 cast nights. It was always Friday night cast, the opening one and the closing one. And because people had to be in it, some of the casks were just like of questionable quality, but this year it was just like you can choose to be in it. So the casks were all pretty top notch.
People were really focusing on them.
Being casks, they're not always perfect, but there were some pretty good ones out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I heard that the On Flavor course by Danny Seaton was really cool as well. I think the beer school segment wrapped up really nicely. Yeah.
That's a new segment this year, right? That beer school?
They've just expanded it. Yeah. And so we did a bunch of events this year, and I think we're planning to expand again for future years. So
That's important to have for a week like we're doing, with a lot more educational classes. It gets people out. Gets people trying and seeing what new products they can get.
Yeah, well, a lot of people combine it with other events, which is cool. So they came to a beer school event and they were going to go to another one that day or that night. Mm. So they got to kind of learn something first before then just going out and enjoying a beer week event. So. Yeah.
Little sore, I missed out on the Brewmaster's brunch, but I had a really bad cold, and I was like, I don't want to just sit at a table next to people just sneezing on their food. Mm-hmm. It's about this
one. It's the new holidays.
It's there.
We had a busy week, so we should talk about any events coming up, if there are events.
There's an event next Wednesday, 2 Crows is at Smith's.
Oh, yeah, I guess that is next Wednesday.
Okay.
That should be fun.
Beer events, I think Pêche Day is next weekend too.
Ooh, that's right. I heard that the Drake will have on about 5 variants of it as well.
They usually get about 5. They usually have a bourbon, a couple different coffees, a cocoa.
And a couple vintage ones as well.
And a vintage one or two. Yeah. So
there's actually quite a bit. Cascade Room's doing a Steel and Oak tap takeover on 13th. Eastside Beer Fest and the 13th again. The Twin Tails tap takeover if you're out in Kelowna way. Don't want to focus too much on Victoria, right?
No.
Dogwood's 4th anniversary.
Wow. Really? I thought they were older too, Dogwood. That's crazy.
Yeah. Huh. Twin Cells and Collective Arts are releasing both of their double IPAs kind of back-to-back at Derby's Gastown on Saturday as well. So
I always thought that beer was already released for some reason.
I drank it and I bought cans, but I guess it's a grand release. I don't think the Collective Arts one has been released here yet, just the Twin Sails one.
But what was Thunder Buddies? Thunder Buddies was them in Four Winds?
So it's Twin Sails, collaborating with Collective Arts, whereas the other one, which is called Hydro Thunder, is Collective Arts collaborating with Twin Cells.
Well, they did it at each other's breweries.
Each other's breweries, yeah. So, a few things.
Cool.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So if you're not burnt out like we are, there's lots to go to.
Yeah.
I shall be staying in my shell.
Oh, yeah.
And it's March break next week.
It is March break
and
next
so
week.
So actually, we're going over with the kids to Vancouver. So I might hit one thing maybe in Vancouver.
Yeah. I think we're going to go with Vancouver at the beginning of April. So I'm kind of excited about it too because I haven't been over in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I want to try a few new restaurants. It's going to be my second wedding anniversary. So we're going to try and book some place pretty cool. But
yeah,
plan to hit a bunch of different breweries.
Awesome.
Because there's a lot of stuff coming out. So.
Okay.
Cool, cool.
We're going to take a quick break, and we shall be back with a little bit of beer news, followed today by a St. Patrick-themed beer tasting. This is true? You're nodding?
Yeah. Irish Stouts.
Irish Stouts.
This weekend, St. Patrick's Day.
It's a Saturday night this year, is it? Or Sunday?
Yeah, that's... is it? It's always Saturday night.
Okay,
yeah. For the drunks, right?
Yeah, so... And we're doing a wine dinner on that night.
Okay. Not an Irish stout dinner.
Not an Irish stout dinner, just a wine.
Sad.
Local wine.
Okay. We will now take our break and we'll be back shortly.
Cool, cool.
Why the hell would you... Okay, and welcome back. Mashing In episode 8. We're ready to talk beer news. Not really ready, I should say, this week. We're just gonna touch on a couple of quick things.
We're not looking stuff up on our phones.
Minus from like a lot of the smaller things happening. There hasn't been too many like massive things happening, but there's a few things happening here on the island as well as
I think the biggest news is that we're all still reeling. Facebook and Instagram were down today for hours.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do.
Chaos.
I didn't have any captions on Instagram. It was just a mess.
I couldn't tell how many likes I had gotten over those hours.
Zero. We were panicking, but you know, we got through it. Yeah.
I was actually panicking because I was trying to get a post up for our brewery and I just couldn't get it up. And I'm like, what is wrong with me?
Duh.
Yeah, I even like deleted Instagram off my phone.
Oh really? Wow, really?
And then re-downloaded the app and logged back in. I had to get a new password. Anyway, and then Adam, one of my partners in this match, just Googled like Instagram down, and it was like first hit. I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. Why did I assume it was my fault?
Yeah,
right.
But you also had, because of your post, you had something interesting happen to you.
Well, that's it. So, and that's kind of my news article. I'm not trying to plug ourselves too much, but we did our first canning run over the last 2 days. And a really exciting bit of news is that there's a new mobile canning company here on Vancouver Island. So for all of us Vancouver Island brewers, this is kind of like
a big news
for us because it means that we have a local and available option. And it's called Valkyrian, and it's owned by a single guy, Zach, who's going to drive it, the truck, and pull the can out and can it. I know. The reason I wanted to talk about it was because I got to run this canning line with him over the last couple of days, and he's running the, it's from Cask Systems in Calgary. And to be honest, Cask put out a bunch of like semi-automatic canning machines maybe like 8 years ago. To like lukewarm reception in the market. Apparently, like some of them were not that fast and they didn't work that well. And so, kind of wild goose out of the States had cornered the market on all of the canning lines that were being sold. But about, I want to say about a year ago, they released this new version called the ACS V5. And having run it over the last 2 days, I was just blown away. Speed, accuracy, like we did over 1,000 liters of beer on 2 different runs, and our waste was under 18 cans on each run.
Wow.
The rest of the beer was all full, weighed out. Like, it was just amazing to see less than 1% loss on canning runs.
Wow.
And with an inline labeler that worked amazingly well as well. So it was just a really cool thing to see a Canadian company like Cask that were kind of left behind a little bit, like come up with this new amazing. The other good thing is it has really low oxygen pickup. Which is something
you're
a lot
saying
of
he's got a lacto line on there strictly for lacto.
No, so what he's doing is that the lines that come up to the fill tubes, those are all made of like beverage grade tubing, and he's given us our own. So whenever he comes to Il Sauvage, we're going to break out our pickup tubes. The rest of the machine is all, everything else the beer touches is either stainless steel or a can. Okay. So you can clean it.
Yeah.
And it's got, the whole canning line has a whole CIP function as well to clean it in place.
Oh, cool.
So it was really cool that he's giving us our own set of lines. So like if we can can whatever the hell we want to can. Nice. And he doesn't have to go to the next brewery and say, well,
they just had lacto in here.
Yeah. So the two beers we canned had live lacto and then brewer's yeast. So there's no Brett or anything in there. Mm. But it was really nice for us as well to be able to put out sours that were not pasteurized and that are dry and have properly matured. So we're actually pretty happy with the two beers.
So is he doing that separate line? Is every brewery going to get one?
I'm not sure if it's going to be every brewery. That's kind of up to him and the breweries to negotiate.
Okay.
This was just his first two. These were his first two runs. And I don't think he's actually, he hasn't booked a lot of other appointments yet.
Okay.
So I think that will come in a little bit of time. But we're super excited because we've already got another beer that we want to can with him.
Oh, sweet.
So.
Very cool.
Looking forward to all the beers. I ended up picking some up today from your place anyway.
And it really funny was that the technician that Cask sent from Calgary to help him run and help us run it in our brewery over the last 2 days is headed to Korea on Monday. And he's installing a line with a bunch of guys that I used to brew with in Korea. It was so funny. He's so, like,
super random.
Yeah. And so I was actually helping him like find addresses, my wife and I and stuff. Anyway, super funny. And Moon Underwater is actually using a line that he commissioned as well to great effect in our local market. So that's my, I guess there's no comments, but that's my.
We should specify as well that they are like 473 mil.
Yes,
four packs. So, so I see you got a few comments like, are those Crowlers?
I know. It's so funny though when you put, they look tiny. Uh-huh. When you put them next to a Crowler, they look so weird. Whereas normally like at the store, like they look like large cans. Crowlers are
massive. Right.
But Crowlers just make them look so dinky. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't, yeah, they are four pack 473s. Uh-huh. Yeah. Some of them are slightly over 473.
Because
we were weighing them all today. But yeah.
Interesting. I wonder which ones I got. Maybe some under?
No, none are under.
That's good.
The ones that are under, we left aside. But there's no golden tickets or anything, sorry.
That's too bad.
Just drink them and enjoy them.
They got a golden label instead.
Yeah. Actually, we were thinking about that for some future releases. Like just hiding a little gold coin under like one of the...
Someone did that.
Yeah.
Bad Dog did that.
Did they?
They did the golden tab or something like that. There was one tab through the whole foot, and then if you got it, you got something for it. I can't remember what it was, but I remember.
Okay.
That was
Twin Cells did one as well recently. Yeah.
That's a cool idea, I think.
It's fun.
Although you get liquor store employees that are just like, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I bet Richie Fletcher would do something like that.
Oh, God, yeah. That piece of shit.
Yeah, if he's not listening. Yeah, of course not. Yeah. He still hasn't figured out his smartphone.
No.
Yeah, this is not a Scotch podcast.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for my news, Ed.
Mine's kind of a bit of a fluff piece.
Great.
Not news, just a bit of entertainment. We all need a bit of that in our lives. So there's a guy in Ohio called Del Hall. He works for 50 West Brewing Company. And for Lent, he's planning to give up food completely and just drink beer.
Okay, now, so before you go on, Lent, explain
Catholic
to us.
Holiday.
Agnostic.
Christian.
Or, yeah.
Christian. Is it?
No. I'm Church of England, technically.
Anglican.
We have Lent too.
Mm-hmm.
Anglican, you call it here, I guess. So you abstain for 40 days and 40 nights.
From something.
Yeah.
From usually most people do it because like, he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. So most...
So most people fast
they'll give up something for 40 days and 40 nights.
Okay.
So
but what is it like in the strictest orthodoxy of churches? Like, what do they actually do for Lent? Is it all food? Because I thought some monks drink beer and do this.
Yeah.
I had
apparently
heard
apparently historically during the 17th century.
Yeah.
But Randy Mosier in his book says that that never really happened.
Okay.
Because apparently lots of monks found a loophole that God finds eating meat with beer. That's okay.
Oh, yeah.
So
God's a cool guy.
Loopholes in the Bible, eh?
Right. Yeah.
Funny.
So this guy...
That was a mistranslation.
Yeah.
Seems unlikely he'll actually be able to do this, because you'll probably get scurvy in about 8 to 12 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
There was a similar
unless you drink about, like, spruce tip beers every day.
Oh, yeah.
There was a similar thing that happened, like, 20, 30 years ago when I was just in university, and these two kids, like, vowed to do only drink beer but eat craft dinner. In their university, and they got scurvy within like a week.
Yes.
Like,
that's
awful.
Yeah, it just, your body needs nutrients.
Yeah, a friend of mine at university ran out of food points on his food card with like 2 weeks left in the semester and didn't want to ask for money. He tried to live off Tang for a week and he was like bedridden.
Yeah, that yeah. stuff's like gonna kill your body.
Exactly.
Anyway.
But I read a cool book a couple of years ago called The Fermented Man. This is tangential to this. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of the book, yeah.
It's an awesome read. It's like it's well written and fun to read for people that are into fermented things like beer and food. So he decided to only eat or consume fermented beverages and products for a year. So he was, you know, if you think about it, though, it's not as hard as it sounds. You can eat bread, you can eat cheese, you can have all kinds of pickles and sour. You just got to make sure that you're probably pickling your own, because he wanted to make sure that they had live cultures in them. Like, so some pickling, it's just vegetables and vinegar, but like true, like original style, like kraut or kimchi is done through a fermentation process. So he was just making sure that he was eating fermented products and drinking all this homebrew and other beer every day. And he goes through and he even went on a trip to Iceland at the end of the book to eat hakarl, which is like the fermented fish. And it's kind of like a shark almost in Iceland.
Yeah.
And apparently it smells like ammonia, but after the fermentation process, it smells almost even worse to most people. Yeah. Something I would like to try one day.
Lovely.
Yeah.
There's a good book that's a good, like a textbook too, if you're into like small fermentation.
Yeah.
It's called Wild Fermentation, I believe.
Yeah, and I have what's the Sandra
the Katz book? And the art of fermentation is the other one that's, and I like the Art of Fermentation too, because it's still like not as a hell of a textbook as it is just like a good, like
you can read it,
you can read it and you can like go through it, and but it does give you textbook recipes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Did you find anything else about Lent, or are we done?
It's to replicate Jesus Christ's sacrifice and withdrawal into the desert for 40 days. I mean, I should know that. I went to like a religious school. I used to have
before
go
he came
to
a back.
Monastery and stuff, which is why I now listen to satanic black metal.
Cool. So. But what, like, when you were young, what would Lent be for you then? Like, did your family do anything for Lent?
To pick one thing to give up.
Okay.
Yeah. And as a kid, you'd always pick Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, it was like the thing you hated the most. So. My dad would give up, drinking for Lent and stuff like that, and my mom would give up something like coffee or something like that. So we'd pray for Lent to be over.
My favorite part was Shrove Tuesday, though, because Pancake Day in the UK.
Yeah,
so you just eat tons of pancakes to get ready.
Oh, so that's like the day before Lent.
Day before Lent, you just eat tons of pancakes and get really indulgent because you're gonna. You're not supposed to. Well, historically, you
isn't God like the parent there, being like, "Hey guys, come on,
come on.
You're not supposed to just gorge yourself the day before. That's a sin."
Yeah.
That's technically a sin. That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, I never gave up anything for Lent. I didn't even know what it was really. So.
Yeah. I just take everything in moderation as best as possible, especially these days.
Except craft beer. Do whatever you want.
Really?
We have throwing objects.
Yeah. Cool.
On that note, we're going to end our beer news segment, and we will be back shortly with a delicious array of Irish dry stouts.
Pretty much BC born.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. We had a lively break.
We are going with one of the iconic beers in the entire beer world right now.
We are. Many would say maybe not even a craft beer anymore. But what is a craft beer?
Well, it's owned by Labatt's, right?
Yeah. Well, and Labatt's is owned by AB InBev.
Yeah, so there you go.
It's a Guinness?
Yeah.
It's French. Oh. Is it a French? No, is it German?
Let's see how this one is.
The English have always had a thing against pronouncing Irish words.
It's a little...
The one that fell over?
So in case you haven't guessed, or in case you haven't listened to the first part of the podcast, we are talking about Irish stouts. BJCP Category 15B. We're going to rely pretty heavily on the BJCP for this one today. We're not going off the cuff chiming in anymore. This is hard hardline stuff.
Hardline, yeah.
Yeah.
Lining in.
So just quickly, one of the things I find that people get wrong about this style is they think that it's one of two things. They think it is boozy, and they think that it's heavy. The style is neither of those things.
Neither.
Neither. So just a couple of vital statistics before we get going. The Irish stout, which is the lightest of all of the stout varieties, comes in at only 4 to 4.5% ABV. So it's low ABV. Also, it's got a fairly low final gravity. So the final gravity is like 10.07, which is quite a dry beer. So it should taste quite dry, which is interesting because it means there's not a lot of body in this beer.
Yeah.
The other thing is that in brewing this beer, it's made with roasted barley, your pale malt, and flaked barley, which again means it's going to be very dry and very low in body. Mm-hmm. So like this is a beer that is not heavy on alcohol, it's not heavy on sweetness, and so it's not full on your palate at all.
This was a beer where, like, when I was in university, people were like, well, it's just like having a meal. Everyone's
all the time
first comment about when you talk about this, it's just a full meal. Like, it's like light. It's not.
So, I swear you could blindfold someone and they'd be like, is that cold brew?
Yeah.
It has a cold brew coffee like
flavor. It does have very, much, very roasty, but yeah. like light.
Yeah. I will admit, when I was younger, like drinking lagers and stuff, when I was like 17, I would find it a lot to drink.
I think that's a lot to do with your perception.
Yeah, well, for right? sure. Yeah.
And what people have told you about stouts. Mm-hmm. So aroma, this has got a wonderful like
roast
coffee, mm-hmm. right?
I got to say the creaminess is fantastic. The widget in the can.
It does, yeah. That. And as per normal with this style, usually they're poured on nitro or with nitro in the can, and so there's very little residual CO2 in them. Mm-hmm. So this... That's why I say it's cold brew-esque because there's no carbonation in this.
Yeah,
it's all about that creamy head. The creamy head does help with that dryness, though. Mm-hmm. So if you carbonated this style really highly, it would taste pretty acidic. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the good things about the nitro in this beer versus nitro in other beers.
Yeah,
is that the nitro is there as a balancing force, in my opinion. And super dry. This is so drinkable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you just forgot about the color, like you could slam. I forgot what everyone said about it.
I always get that little bit of tanginess though from this beer, and I think that's what you mean when you're saying it was carbonated. You get a lot more citrusy from it.
Yeah, and this is because it's dry, and the roast malt is adding some acidity to it as well.
I get it much like when I first started drinking Guinness, like much younger. I get a strong iron flavor. It always reminded me of like when you bit the inside of your cheek and you got that blood flavor from the iron from the hemoglobin. But I mean, I can kind of get it slightly, but...
It's because one of the other things, the hallmark of this style is hard water.
Yeah.
Dublin is famous for having super, super hard water. Mm-hmm. So you don't brew with that hard of water, but you brew with fairly hard water that's high in baking soda and also calcium chloride, which helps round this... it helps to counteract some of the roast malt acidity, right? So if you think about it as well, it almost has like a slight Alka-Seltzer almost flavor to the middle of the beer. Yeah, not in an unpleasant way, but...
No.
So the main examples of this style, like the main like worldwide commercial styles are obviously Guinness Draft. Mm-hmm. So they renamed this because the original Guinness was not this.
Yeah.
This is a lightened version of the original Guinness was an export stout.
Yeah,
it's stronger, bigger.
Which you can still get somewhere.
Usually in bottles.
Yeah.
So if you buy cans, it's almost always the draft. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really confusing on menus. You're like, a Guinness draft. You're like, oh yeah, I'll have a Guinness. And then it comes in a can to the table. You're like, happened to me in Asia several times. Because I thought it was on draft, but it was Guinness draft. This is like a lightened version for the mat. Like, you know, they pared it down a little bit from what it used to be. But they still do make that in bottles. Mm-hmm. And it's an extra stout or the foreign stout. I think Guinness calls it. The other examples are Beamish Irish Stout, which is really good. Beamish. And Murphy's Irish Stout. Those are like the main examples of the style.
Very popular.
Bring back some memories.
But it seems to be quite popular. Like when I worked at the Drake, they usually had a nitro tap on, usually with a dry Irish stout on there. Not Guinness, because it's not craft beer, but another one. And it was usually quite popular. Like the people
Yeah, people.
People like the nitro pours, and they like.
Sometimes some of them have coffee in it too, but like, yeah, like those drier nitro stouts really tend to attract a lot of those Guinness drinkers, if not more dark.
Yeah. So the other funny thing about this beer to me is like I haven't had a dry Irish stout in a long time.
Yeah.
I these days tend to prefer the bigger pastry type stouts and so this one compared to those tastes quite watery. I'm not saying like this is a bad version of this beer, like this is the style, but like
it is light.
If I gave this to you after you had like con leche, you'd be like, what is this, con leche with water?
It's got a lot of watered down a sort of feel to it just because we're used to a little bit more intensity and flavor, especially B-bombs and dark stars.
We're
used to having a bit more formal coffee notes, so but I could definitely have like three more of these and be pretty happy.
I mean, for essentially a macro beer, it's probably one of the more palatable ones for sure.
Well, it's I think they do they still claim that they run the original recipe. I guess not the original recipe, because it's the original recipe is a export.
Okay, a little bit about the backstory of this, if you want to open the next beer and we can talk a little bit about the backstory. This one. Okay. Cool. So
homegrown first, right?
Oh, okay.
So after the Guinness, we've got four examples of BC brewed Irish stout.
Yeah.
This is from Spinnaker's. It's their dry Irish stout.
There you go. No messing about. It's even got a shamrock or a clover.
It sure does.
On the label.
We do have, I think the two ones made here on the island we have are the most high in alcohol. So I think this is
what's
five.
What's this clocking in at?
This is five. Yeah. And then,
so this is right on the this is above the boundary technically, but we'll look the other way.
I'm not gonna complain too much about it.
So originally, stouts were technically stout porters, and the term stout meant stronger. There were several different porters made in London. Of those porters, the stout porter was the strongest and biggest of them. Most of the other people didn't drink the stout, like people chose to drink different strengths of them, of these dark beers. This is with the advent. They used to use a lot of brown malt in England, but then there was a big invention, which was it was called black patent malt, because they patented it a way to roast barley and make it darker. So basically you could use only a small amount of roast malt to make a beer black. So instead of making a beer from all brown malt, you could make a beer from mostly pale malt, which saved on money, on malt, and then you could add just a little bit of roasted barley in for that color and flavor. And then Guinness, when they started, started making all dark beers, and they made several versions of them. So yeah, this is one of the, this is the lighter version that has become the worldwide.
Right.
Phenomenal. This is what you think of when you have a Guinness.
Yeah. So this one.
Spinnaker's.
Doesn't smell that roasty.
No, it's more quite different.
More of an ale, fruity, like...
I jumped ahead and took a sip, and...
It's almost like an ESB note to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's got that English ale fruitiness to it.
That's what I'm getting, yeah.
It's not...
It's not nearly as dry.
No. It's got a bit of sweetness to it.
Definitely.
And it just... It's not that carbonated, but it just tastes so much more carbonated than the Guinness.
Yeah, everyone...
Obviously. But these are all going to be like that because they're not on nitro.
That lacto-esque part of it, though, is that like almost tanginess that the Guinness has is not there. This has got a bit more smoothness to it.
That's probably because it's boozier and sweeter, right? And so it's balancing that out. This is a nice stout, but I don't think it's a dry Irish stout, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. It's
not dry.
Not quite the same.
It's also not as dark, hey? It's almost like a dark brown, if you're looking at it. In the light. Sorry, the light's right. Yeah, it's not quite as jet black as the...
This is good radio.
Everyone, please, hold your glasses high.
No, I mean, it's not export either, because it's still under that proof. It's only 5%, but it does have a lot more malty sweetness to it.
Yes, exactly. An interesting story about Guinness was... As most people have already heard on the podcast, I lived in Korea, and Guinness, operates plants all over the world. So instead of making Guinness only in Ireland and then sending it out, they make brewing facilities. So there's several brewing facilities in Asia. And what they would do to promote the brand of Guinness is open pop-up bars.
Oh, cool.
And this is so weird, but they opened one on the beach next to, like, anyway, a little bit down from our craft brewery. We were there. And So they opened this Guinness pop-up bar, and you couldn't buy a pint.
What?
You know what? When you walked in, they said, "Oh, would you like to learn how to would you like to learn how to pour a Guinness?" Yeah,
really? Sorry. Like that's the
most they used? I'm joking, but
a Frenchman trying to do the Scottish accent, yeah, the Irish accent.
French Canadian trying to do a Asian version of an Irish accent. No, and they would give you a passport, like a little like passport looking thing, like a Guinness passport.
Yeah.
And they would teach you how to pour a pint.
Wow.
And the funny thing is that pouring a pint of Guinness is the easiest pint you've ever poured. Because it's on nitro, and you basically just handle all the way open, straight down into the glass, and pour it. And then you can consume said beverage, and then move on your way. But you're only allowed to do one, but like, you know, we'd always be like, you know. The workers would be like, okay, fine, you're back again.
It was funny at the bars we used to work at before when we were pouring Guinness, that they would have, like, there was a certain way of pouring it, and it was tilting the glass. And then letting it sit.
Oh, yeah.
And
sorry.
Then, and then filling it. But to pour the head properly, they felt that you still had to have this much, like this 2.5 inch amount of head. And it sort of cascaded forward, but it was still, you couldn't have a full head, like a full whole glass full of head and let it dissipate.
Yeah.
I used to know some people who would get a pint, but then they'll get like a shot glass on the side to top it up with when the head began to dissipate.
Okay.
Serious about the head.
Yeah,
they like that.
Anyway. Well, the Guinness taps usually have a way to. I think if you push them forward, you can create foam
head. Oh, really?
Yeah. So the ones I've seen, you can open them all the way this way, and it comes out, and then you push on them,
just
and
to
you.
Top it.
Yeah, it just allows a little bit of an airway, and that little bit just creates head. You don't get beer out of it. Yeah.
And do you know the traditional? Well, not traditional. Do you know like the whole fad about? Pouring it at bars for bartenders, and they're that you can actually make a shamrock in the head, and it's like finishing like
I've
a
seen
latte.
Pictures of that.
It's like it's like finishing a latte. So just as before you're done, you actually make two figure eights and then finish a hook at the end, and that makes like the shamrock, and that's been like a bartender like move for Guinness for God knows how long. But that's where like you're a good bartender if you can do that kind of thing.
Well, are you a good barista if you can make a, you know, the Mona Lisa in your latte?
You spell my name right. That's a good start.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Ed.
It's not that hard.
Stop going to Starbucks, Ed.
Did you get like a... Oh, sorry.
E-D-D.
Yeah, right, there you go. Right. Good enough.
Ed? Is Ed here?
You get like a touch of smokiness on that too?
Maybe a hint. Yeah.
I got just a slight hint.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Another can, or
let's do the next homegrown since we're staying in our neighborhood.
Yeah, I picked this up. I look at this every day. It's a big mural near our brewery. This is Hoynes Finnegan Irish Stout. What do we got for?
It's a reference to Ulysses by James Joyce.
Well, it's James Joyce on the label.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And when I was in Dublin, I did a walking literary tour where we went to the pub where James Joyce drank and wrote everything. It was pretty cool.
His tie has even got a whole bunch of like Irish like
Gaelic symbols. Yeah.
Same with the label.
Oh, it's like the knot, whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm. It's usually on a cross or something like that.
It's just funny because James Joyce is impossible to read.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you have
tried.
No.
Portrait of the artist as a young man. It's like, what is happening?
That one's easier than Finnegan's Wake or Ulysses.
Yeah, true. Ulysses for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, this is by Hoyne. I brought this. I got it. You can get it at any local liquor store, I'm sure, around BC right now.
That's really
gross. Be surprised if you couldn't.
Did we not do? Yeah.
So what do we got for ABV?
This switches all the way out to Alberta too, I think, these guys.
Does it?
Yeah.
This is 5.1 ABV, and it lists the ingredients as filtered water, barley, hops, and yeast.
Yeah. The FYI, the Irish stout from Spinnaker's had wheat in it as well.
Oh, really?
So this, I get a lot of like toasty roastiness, but I get sweetness again.
But I think this beer finishes dry, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that Irish stout dry finish.
They've all had a very different aroma.
Mm-hmm. This one, yeah.
Yeah.
This one, it's got yeast aroma to it, in my opinion.
Mm. It's kind of a little bit meaty
mm-hmm.
to me.
It's a beefier beer than the last two we've had, for sure.
Yeah, in terms of body, like I assume this beer has a quite high. I think I'm saying it finishes dry because I think it's higher on the bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
But
I do like the flavor of it. But yeah, it's definitely slightly sweet for the style.
So I just want to give a little bit more history about this style, if I may.
Do it.
While you look at that label. It says, this style evolved from attempts to capitalize on the success of London porters, but originally reflected a fuller, creamier, more stout body and strength. Guinness began brewing only porter in 1799, a stouter kind of porter in 1810. So Irish stout diverged from London single stout in the late 1800s with an emphasis on darker malts. Guinness was among the first breweries to use black patent malt for porters and stouts in the 1820s. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah. So Guinness started using flaked barley in the 1950s, also increasing attenuation greatly. So basically the beer dried out over time.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah. There's a lot of history around stouts and porters that's like you can read more about. I read a great blog. I can't remember the name of the blog. You might know that guy. Percy Hawkins, the guy that writes the history blogs about beer. He wrote a great one about the difference between stout and porter.
Oh, okay.
And the answer is there is none.
And
he goes all through it, but like if someone learns a little bit about beer, they might tell you, if you ask them what's the difference between stout and porter, they might say the difference is roasted barley. So yeah. Roasted barley is not a malt,
okay,
because it's not malted yet.
Mm-hmm.
They take the barley and they roast it before it's gone through the malting process.
Yeah.
Whereas things like chocolate malt and special B and these other dark malts, they undergo malting process first and then they get roasted. So people would say stout needs roasted barley and a porter is made without roasted barley.
Right.
He just debunked the whole thing. So the actual answer is not very interesting because there is no difference between stout and porter.
Mm-hmm.
What they call a London porter and an American porter, there is a difference between, but there's no real... When they call something a Baltic porter...
Yeah.
It could just as well be called a Baltic stout. It doesn't really... Yeah. The whole designation there is that it's a dark, roasty beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's whatever your marketing team thinks is...
These days, best of marketing. What do you think? What do you think would be a better marketing term, though? Stout or porter?
It depends. Like a chocolate porter?
Sounds that really good.
Chocolate stout. People are going to think it's big, though. That's the funny thing about it.
Yeah, that's true.
I know. And we picked the lightest stout style.
Yeah.
You don't see, like, it's weird, like, certain things, like, you don't see, like, you see a lot of oyster stouts and never really see an oyster porter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that. That's right.
It's
just, oyster stouts.
That's also a weird one.
Oyster stout rolls off your tongue a bit better, though.
It does. I think, you're right. That's one that benefits from just name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another interesting one, though, because that's not, like, there's no classic style.
No. Mm-hmm.
And the only reason it works is because of the salinity of the oysters. You're not tasting oysters.
Mm-hmm.
So the funny thing is, I always joke that, like, just skip adding the oysters to your beer and just add a little bit of salt.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Yeah.
Like, you don't need to use, like, because the pairing is the original, like, so in terms of craft beer pairings, it hasn't been around as long as wine pairings, but like, we have a couple of classics.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being curry and IPA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the other main one being Guinness and oysters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just works. The salinity and the delicate flavors in that oyster are just enhanced, and the beer is also enhanced by the salt in the oyster.
And I think if you get an East Coast oyster too, I find a lot of East Coast oysters have a higher saline count in their brine, and it really would come out a bit more brilliant with the Guinness. And that would make sense because Guinness probably brewed on closer to the waters of the Atlantic. So for us, that's the Atlantic. So that would make a lot more sense, but...
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, I feel like it's a shame sometimes when you read, like, if you get an oyster stout, there's a couple made locally, and you don't really get that, you just get the salt, and they're like hand shucked local oysters.
I know.
Like, man, that's a lot of wasted time for a lot of employees.
See, I think you should just most places can't do this.
I hate when people use those names for something like that. It's like handmade bread. I'm like, well, how else do you freaking make it?
How about foraged?
Yeah.
I always
Like, to me, forage, it's like, you found it?
Yeah. I don't
know. A classic example is homemade for me. Like, oh, did you make it in your home?
Yeah, exactly.
You brought this into work?
Yeah. Well, no. we say at work, sometimes we say house made.
Because it was made in the back of house.
It was made in the back of house. So. Because people like, because for a lot of the time, especially with things like bread, most bread's not made in the restaurant that's made it. Yep. These days, in this town, a lot of it is. But... Yep. Hand-shucked oysters. There's only one way to shuck it, and it's in your friggin' hand.
Well, that's why, like, I think it would be better if you could. I know most breweries couldn't do this, but just make a stout and then have oysters there in your tasting room or something. Mm-hmm. Like, make an event out of it.
Yeah.
I went to an awesome event at Holy Mountain a couple years ago where they had Hama Hama oysters, which is, like, on the Olympic Peninsula, sitting there shucking. You went up to the, there was a snaked line, you went up to the bar, grabbed your beer, and there was another line to go get oysters. It was so good. They're those, like, nice, I like them meaty. A lot. I'm not a big fan of the big oysters. I like the
beach oysters.
Yeah. I like the little ones, and they were serving up a bunch of those.
You ever see how they grow oysters? Yeah. A lot of the farms, like, especially the Coochie farms, they grow them on chain link fence. And they all live there, and what they do is they shake the fence. And what happens is the oysters don't like the noise from the fence, so they migrate further and further, and that's how you get that low, deep shell. The oyster's migrating as it grows older, and that's how you get that deeper, thicker oyster and sitting in the brine.
It's way better than I thought he was going to say.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, don't tell me. I don't want to know.
No, oyster farming is actually not that bad. So,
yeah.
You know, respect to Spinnaker's, when they released their oyster stout this year, we're going way off topic, but they actually did an event where you could get oysters.
That's awesome, yeah.
And they were like, some of them were treated with the stout and stuff like that, and they had a cask where they put fresh oysters in. And...
Well, the funny thing, too, is like, all bivalves, they'll just open up as soon as you put them in hot water, so to shuck them is just a waste of your time.
I know, right? Like,
anyway. Where's my snail stout?
So the one beer that I meant to bring tonight...
Snails are expensive.
There you go. Do that next winter. Snail stout.
Yeah. The one beer I meant to bring tonight because I really like it is Tofino's Kelp Stout because it's a stout and then they add kelp, which is basically the same as adding oysters, but a lot easier because you go down to the beach and grab a bunch of bull kelp and shove it in your mash.
They really do good
Not literally the beach.
No.
The dogs are peeing and stuff.
Well, they probably have that where they get their kelp is probably vast, so... Some animals peeing on it for sure, but it's all from the ocean. It's all salt washed.
Those goddamn otters, man.
Yeah,
peeing on everything.
Those otters are like a detriment. Not a detriment.
Sea cleans everything.
Anyway, so we're gonna move over to the Sunshine Coast.
This one's from Persephone.
Persephone.
That's how you say it.
My favorite record label.
Yeah. Persephone from and they play they most of the music is played on the Gibson guitars. So,
That was quick.
That was quick, yeah.
That was good. I like it. This is that.
Is that a guitar joke?
That was a guitar joke, yeah. This is a nitro can, by the way.
Way over my head.
Oh, is it?
Well, it says nitro on the can, so.
I hope there's nitro.
Open hard pour.
This is aptly titled Dry Irish Stout, and it's 4.5%.
Well, they're hitting.
Hard pour.
It's hard to hard pour between three people. Oh, God. Good God.
Why do people get obsessed with this? The hard pour.
That's what activates the nitro tab in it.
It doesn't seem to do a lot on this one.
No.
If you do it with one of the left-hand ones, whew.
As an aside, it's really difficult to package a nitro beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. You're about to say something, but left-hand is a pioneer.
Left-on has done it perfectly for cans outside the widget, because the widget is fully coined by Guinness.
Yeah.
So no other brand can have it unless they're owned by... whatever AB InBev or Guinness, what's the one brand that's done it the best for nitro, where you can crack open anything of their beers and pour them straight open, is that
this has got like into the beer. This has got the same feel in my mouth as the Guinness, but it's got like a baker's chocolate like bitterness to it.
Yeah, like kind of like a bit of sweet.
Yeah,
like
it's not as roasty either.
No, it reminds me
bacon off this too.
I remember when my mom, she always had baker's chocolate in the cupboards.
Yeah,
sometimes like, I really want a snack, and I grab a bit, and you're like, same. Oh man,
That was probably Knorr baker's chocolate too, which is not the greatest chocolate.
This is, I'm not saying in a horrible way, but it reminds me of that baker's chocolate.
A lot of people for their nitro cans now, they're instructing you to actually not shake the can, but go up upside down 3 times and then open and pour.
Yeah.
And that agitates it a bit more.
Otherwise, the nitrogen just escapes right away. Exactly. Straight out the lid, yeah.
I did have a weird experience with a nitro, and it was actually a Scottish ale from Left Hand. And it was like a year old. I bought it from...
Mm-hmm. Are you sure it was a Scotch ale?
It's a Scotch ale.
They do an ESB on nitro as well.
They do. Yeah. They have a Scotch ale, and they have the chai milk stout. And they have a double right now, too, which is really good.
Okay, but well, then, go ahead.
It got to like, I guess it was like a year old. I mean, older for it. It was in a local store. I was like, I love this beer. It's actually really good. Mm-hmm. But I tried to do the hard pour in, and I did it in like a proper, like, well, not a proper glass. That I would have obviously done that into a tulip or a thistle if I was being super fancy. But I was like, it's nitro.
Are you sure you don't mean thimble?
No. I was like, this is a nitro pour. I just got a big old shaker pint out. And I went, whoop. Like that, and it just went all over my kitchen side.
Oh, wow.
And it was just like going everywhere. I was like, okay, so I guess
this is really enjoyable.
Age affected that.
Yeah, I I like the dryness. I think it adheres to style quite well. But you're right, less coffee, more chocolate, in my opinion.
Smoky.
This is the only
smoky.
Yeah.
Here that actually tells you what to expect in terms of flavors, and I'll tell you what they say. They say
your mama's baker's chocolate. Your mama.
This is basically made with Knorr baking products.
It says it has a roasty coffee-like aroma with undertones of freshly baked oatmeal cookies, flavors of dark coffee and toast with balancing bitterness. So,
And it's all organic, right? Because this is an entire organic brewery that grows predominantly.
Yeah, they do say it's a social venture committed to being ecologically and socially responsible.
I don't think I don't know if it's all organic or not, but they do some of their hop growing and barley growing on site.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have a lot of problems with that originally. They had to grow. Well, that's why they start growing apples.
Yeah.
Because there's all these land rules. Ugh.
It's Harvard Brewers because, like, and I would argue, like, in Canada, we have the huge prairies.
Yeah.
And that is our barley/wheat belt. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to open a farm-based brewery in BC, like, if you just think about it, like, big picture, what the hell do you need to be growing barley for?
Yeah.
Barley grows great in the prairies. Mm-hmm. And there's huge processing plants. The efficiencies are so much better there.
Yeah.
We are a temperate rainforest.
Yeah.
Hops are our thing here.
Yeah.
If you're going to be an agricultural like brewery, you grow your hops here, not your fucking barley.
I think they also were just trying to get that agricultural license.
I know, but for their
product, right?
So. But I just think it's ridiculous that we would hold a brewery to that because there's no point to make them grow barley in BC. You're just making them do something that shouldn't be done here anyway.
But it's a government thing too.
So I know.
It's going to be like, well, whatever. Like, you got to do that if you want to have the designation. Well.
Yeah, I know, but like bakers, you're not saying like, oh, you better use like, you know, only BC local wheat. Like,
you gotta grow your own wheat for making this bread.
Yeah,
out of back.
I think a lot of the red fife that we're getting, a lot of the bakeries around here that use for their bread is coming from.
That being said, though,
there is a few places
on the island here. North Saanich is actually good for growing wheat and barley, and so is in Washington, just across from us, like on a similar latitude, the Skagit Valley, including like areas around Bellingham, also really good for growing wheat and barley. So we can grow it locally, but again, like there are these zones that are better for growing it.
They're quite a bit more north too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, that's age old. It is a B Corporation.
I tried one last night.
Yeah.
Which one?
We were after we finished our canning round, went over to Moon Underwater, and we were talking with Clay, and they had a new beer called Tasteful Nudes.
Oh, I saw that.
And it's made with a. I'm going to give up the joke, but I don't think anyone got it anyway when Clay named the beer. Oh. But he brewed it with Mike Donnell from North Saanich, his nude barley. So it's barley that was grown without a husk. It's like a variant of barley. Normally, barley has a very rigid husk. So,
yeah. Okay. Cool.
Anyway, that's was really good. And it was an interesting beer with a great name.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a very clay name.
Yeah. Tasteful Nudes.
Tasteful Nudes.
Yeah. I prefer playful nudes, but that's just me. Yeah.
I prefer fresh nudes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Ed's shirt right now says, please send nudes. So that's weird.
Any nude.
Yeah.
Not fussy.
That's right.
Is this why you like Noodle Box so much?
Oh, God.
What is the last beer? This has got some. This has got some imagery on it.
It's got the Irish knots. I was just looking up.
Is that what it's called?
Well, yeah. There's a lot of different braids and stuff in their symbols, with their Irish cross and a few other things.
Look at us being culturally sensitive. I've never known what that's called, but you see it and you know it's Irish.
Did anyone bring any Jameson to spike this stuff with? Like, come on.
Yeah. Because even like the Thor's hammer symbols are actually Irish knots that are ornamental.
Pretty common tattoo too.
When I was traveling around Ireland, I rented a car with some classmates and we drove all around Ireland, just around Ireland. And I didn't drink a lot of Guinness. Yeah. I preferred Smithwick on tap.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I thought it was Boddington's delicious.
Too, though. Yeah. Boddington's is still a great nitro pour, too.
Boddington's English.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah,
that's right. It is English.
Yeah.
Messing it up again.
The best commercials. You should look up, like, I think it's 1990s Boddington's commercials. They're hilarious.
Oh, really? There's
this lady drinking it, and she's just got, like, a stout mustache, and she's like...
A stout mustache?
Like
from the foam of the...
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So,
you just got to watch them. I remember hilarious.
I used to work at an English pub when I was in high school, and when I turned 19, they were talking to me about a bunch of the beers, and I was like, "Oh, Guinness," but like, yeah, but usually like, and I was trying to try a bunch of the different beers we had because we had like 20 different beers on tap. They were all in that England range and Scott and Irish range, and I ordered a Smithwick's. And they said, okay, just let you know.
Smithwick's.
Anywhere you go, you're going to get in trouble if you don't call it Smithwick's. But most people prefer Smithwick's to Guinness.
Yeah.
A lot of people do, yeah. And it's just, it's a bit more malt forward.
Yeah,
more
smooth. It's fuller, it's maltier. Guinness, like we were saying, is very light and dry.
This Guinness,
and tangy,
yes.
And tangy, like you said.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was I was trying to remember an Irish story of when I was... Have any of you been... on the Guinness tour in Dublin?
I have
no
idea.
No,
Cameron has actually.
I went, and it was really funny because you mentioned that advertising. It's in the old brewery, and you go up level by level. They've got a giant, circular staircase in the middle of the building. And so, like, you kind of, like, walk up slowly level by level around the middle. And, like, floor 7 is just Guinness advertising.
Oh, God.
But their advertising like has a very cool look.
Yeah.
Especially like in the 70s and 80s. Like it had that, you know, the toucan and like so.
Oh, yeah.
But they have a giant just museum of their own advertising that you're supposed to like marvel at or something. It was just
very
weird.
Pop culture advertising, like goodness, my Guinness or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a bit of a weird tour because it was a little bit... A lot of the stories they tell, I looked up afterwards, and they're totally false. So they
told, like the Alexander Keats
tour? Yeah, exactly. So on the tour, they told us, I'm not joking, because it stuck in my, like, it was burned in my brain. They said that the reason that Guinness was, like, so dark was because there was a fire in their malt storage. And like, a third of the grain all burned. And then they were like, oh, what are we going to do with our beer now? Well, I guess we got to use it. And then the resulting beer was just so delicious. And I was like, and then I looked it up afterwards. I was like, no. This whole black patent.
Oh, God.
Thing. Yeah.
I know. So that's why the tour was a bit grown with it. And like, level 8 was like exit through the gift shop. Like,
yeah,
a whole level of like Guinness gear.
Yeah.
And then level, I think it was level 9, is like, it's the best pub in Dublin. Because it's a round building, it's all glass, and it's a bar in the middle, and you can just look out over the whole city.
Can you go in without doing the tour?
Yeah.
I wish. So the only problem we had is, like, my friend and I were there, and we, like, did the whole tour, and they, okay, and at the end of the tour, here's your token for a Guinness. We're like, great. So give the token, grab a Guinness, best view in the city. We're like, okay, let's settle in. And then sure enough, they're like, so we'd like to buy a couple more? No.
No, get out.
One token per customer.
What?
Like, what?
They don't want you getting...
No, they want you. Because they want to get the next, group.
Sam Adams, they let us drink in there. We did the Sam Adams tour. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
And they exit through the gift shop, but they have their pub. And it's like kind of in a weird part of Boston, too. It's like almost like just like an East Van of Boston, almost.
Yeah.
And you just sit there and you can have as much as you want, drink it as you can get. And they have all like little test batches there, like all the brewers like in that plant, because that plant's still their test batch plant. And they have a few other like larger plants to mass produce a few things, but
can you get a pint of Utopia?
Utopius,
oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I asked, and they told me to go fuck myself. So.
You can buy everybody asked that.
You can buy it by the bottle for $200.
Yeah.
So what are we drinking now?
This is a Raven's Dry Irish Stout. Not an Irish Dry Stout, but a Dry Irish Stout.
Okay.
And it's worth mentioning this one, well, is it though, awards? Second place for Irish / Scottish Ale at the BCB Awards in 2016.
I wonder how many people entered that one.
At least 1, 2, 3, 4 that I can see.
Did they though?
I don't think they all did.
I don't think they entered.
What's our ABV on this one?
I think 4.6.
4.8.
4.8, okay.
33 IBU.
I actually drank this one the other night.
That is very similar to Guinness.
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit. Actually.
It's more carbonated for sure, but
yeah, the carbonation is the one thing throwing up. Again, it's a little bit meaty. Like,
is it
finding,
still too meaty?
Yeah,
I found the Persephone more meaty.
What are you looking for? Oh, the can.
Mm.
There's no like taste description or anything.
But I like it. This is more compared to Guinness. I find it much bolder. Like, it's got more malt flavor, more less coffee, more roast, like lighter roast flavor. And also,
I get that smokiness again. It's got a much, unless that's just from the last one that's just hanging out. But
it's got a much darker head than Guinness as well. So, like, if you notice, Guinness usually has like a white.
This one
head.
Had like a very like roasty brown. Yeah.
I assume they're using a blend of roasted malts, not just the.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really specify like the malt bill or anything on this one, which is a bit of a shame, but
and like, I don't know, we're using the BJCP, but like, this is not to say like you can't make a good stout not following it. It's just these are our comparisons. Like, we start with Guinness and how it's made and then jump into these beers, and
I am liking
this might be my favorite.
Yeah,
this is a pretty good beer. I like this one
too. Just because it's got like, it's got more going on than a lot of the other ones, and
takes away that wateriness, and it does give you a bit.
This is not watery at all.
No, it's really nice.
4.8%.
Yeah, 4.8.
Yeah,
which is, it's not as sweet either, but it is dry, but it still has that like smoky and roastiness to it.
And I think it's got higher bitterness, which I think counteracts that like fuller flavor to it. So this is I don't know if they designed it this way, but I'd say it's an intelligent play because you can get away with more body with the bitterness there to like make it feel dry.
Ravens has been putting out some pretty new beers, actually.
They've been winning some serious awards, too.
Mm. Yeah, IBUs are... It's funny about Irish stouts, though. I'm looking right now, and IBUs are listed on the BJCP are 25 to 45, which is pretty damn high, especially for a dry beer. So I'm... They don't talk a lot about it, but I'm guessing, like, it should have some... Yeah. So, sorry, just reading back to the initial paragraph here, it says that the balance can range from fairly even to quite bitter, with the more balanced versions having a little malty sweetness, and the bitter versions being quite dry.
Right.
So I guess it does have a little bit of range in this style, so not out of the question what we've kind of been tasting.
Yeah.
We were comparing it to Guinness, but this is not out of style.
No. Well, it's funny because the Finnegan's calls it an Irish stout, but... The Spinnaker's calls it a dry Irish stout, whereas they are both very similar and not dry.
So yeah, the actual style in here is just called Irish stout, even though most people listed it as dry Irish stout.
Yeah. I thought one of these said Irish dry stout.
So both of these, the Persephone and the Spinnaker, say dry Irish stout.
Yeah, well, this one does too, actually, the Raisins.
But this, the Finnegan's just says Irish stout, so it's allowing them to... get the realm they want.
So of the Irish stouts, there's only two.
Does this one list the IBUs? Because only two of these do. 20 and 30.
It's not that important.
Coyne doesn't really list their IBUs, do they?
Which is interesting. It's an interesting change.
But in a dry beer, in a dry light beer like this, IBUs are actually kind of telling.
Yeah.
Compared to like double IPAs or pastry stouts. Like honestly. Yeah. The IBU number on this is a lot more indicative of the bitterness than it is in other beers. So.
No, there's no IBU count on here.
I think I'm really liking this one, actually.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's wrap this up.
Yeah,
wrap it up.
Make it quick and easy.
In a nice little package. Thoughts on Irish stouts?
It's got a place for sure. Yeah,
I know.
Right? I'm still happy with my Guinness, but I do like a lot of the ones that are being produced around here. I do like the Finnegan's a lot. I think it's. I was lucky enough to be at an event last Thursday, and Hoyne was beside me, and they gave me a couple sips of Finnegan's while we were working, and hush hush. But I was like, yeah, this is really enjoyable. It's not quite sweet enough to be the next port, but it's still a nice, like, full-bodied stout. It's nice. Ravens, they're really killing it these days.
Yeah.
I'd say the Ravens was definitely my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Me too.
That's they were all really good,
though. Yeah, but yeah. This is a style that, like, is a great craft beer style because it just showcases a cool malt flavor that you can get from a process. So,
and, like, I like having this style for stouts a lot just because I like having dark beers, and if I can have one or two dark beers in a night, it's nice. It's the reason why I like drinking, like, cask milds and stuff like that, because I like the malty, like, slight sweetness of it, but, like, you can have two or three of them and you don't have to fall down drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh. I also like Imperial Stouts.
If you're out,
yeah, I know. It's both ends.
Yeah, it's a dangerous one. If you're out this weekend, though, try and pick up some of these. Celebrate St. Patrick's.
Mm-hmm. I would say,
be safe.
I'd say this is awesome, though, like, getting a nice variety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of just picking up the Guinness. Like,
yeah.
See if you can find a few other ones around. There might be a few other. This is what we were able to find in our neighborhoods, but if you can find another Irish Stout, try it and see if you can. Mm-hmm. See the differences from the BGCP and whatnot.
Salt Spring sometimes has one, but I didn't see it around this year.
They do an oyster stout.
They do. It was. I didn't pick it up because it was labeled stout. Dry porter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dry porter.
I know, and I was like, I think they mean dry stout.
So should we do dry porters next time?
Oh god.
Weird.
Cool. Let's go around and hawk our shit, or Hawksworth our shit.
Hawksworth. Not anymore.
Yeah, sorry.
Anyway, Stefan.
Socks Cover Feet. Instagram, and do all of the posting for Il Sauvage Brewing. Brian?
I'm at How I Handle My Vices, periods between each word, and Beer Can REV on Instagram. And you can find me cooking dinner at the Courtney Room 5 nights a week, sometimes 6 or 7 nights a week.
Including Sundays.
So Sunday dinners. This weekend's not happening because we're doing C-Star sold-out wine dinner, long table, 35 people. So join us next week. We've already half booked for it. $35. Sit down. I do about four courses, 6 plates, give or take. And there is even some wine deals, possibly some beer deals, with a possible Il Sauvage dinner coming up. So
cool.
Nice. Ed K on Instagram, Twitter, Bring Your Port to the Slaughter on Facebook, bringyourporttotheslaughter.com is my blog. And What's Brewing, I'm associate editor there, apparently. And nice. I do the events every
associate
week.
To the editor or
associate editor.
Who do you report to? Seriously.
I do the Dave. I do the events in the newsletter every week. So
cool.
Keep an eye on that stuff. And Mashing In
for
Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook and all of the podcast sites.
And thank you all for your support.
Yeah, we officially got our iTunes email the other day. So.
Oh,
even though we're already on there, they just sent
that's
the
weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, give us a 5-star review.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And mention Australia, please.
God damn it.
You get a free high five if you mention Australia.
My family's going to be so disappointed.
Yeah.
Your high five can be picked up at either Il Sauvage or the Courtney Room.
Yes. Yes. You find us there. Thank you again for listening to us. We really appreciate all the support from everyone around our community. So, cheers.
Good night. My kids are still sleeping.
Oh, yeah. Surprisingly.